If you're purchasing a new home or refinancing your existing home, then you need to call Team Hochberg, your trusted local lender, 855-563-2843, or visit 56diva.com. Lower.com, Equal Housing Lender, MLS 112-4061.
Now, on the line right now, Ryan and Mikkel Becker. And boy, did they have some story to tell. First of all, for both of you guys, congratulations. You recently had a baby, correct?
Thank you, Steve.
Thank you so much, Steve.
So how
it's
old?
Actually birth control baby, actually.
So oh, what? What was that?
Surprise.
What was? Say that again?
Atlas was a vasectomy birth control baby. So we were not planning on him, but he has been the biggest blessing.
Oh.
Just in general, and especially going through all that we've gone through, he's just such a light. We're so grateful for him.
So after you have little Atlas, who's lifting up the world on his shoulders, even as a little baby, isn't that what Atlas mm-hmm. did? I don't know. So as you yes. have after right after that, tell me what happens. One of you begin to tell the story.
Yeah, well, I'll let you handle that one.
Well, so Ryan, back in June of 2024, started to have what we thought was back knee, and that was really the first sign of what came to be. But when it really hit was January, and Ryan all of a sudden started to get these sores on his legs. They were like lesions and almost looked like frostbite because they would turn black in places. And we had no idea what they were coming from, but it seemed like they were coming just from like little things, like from like carrying the car seat, for instance, and having it rub on his leg, or having something in his pockets, for instance, that was also like rubbing on his leg. And he went to the doctor and they diagnosed him with pyoderma gangrenosum. And
What? So there is something I doubt you heard of when you're given that diagnosis. What is that exactly?
Yes, yeah, so pyoderma gangrenosum, it's believed to be an autoimmune condition, and basically it's where the skin attacks itself. So Ryan's skin creates sores just on his body, and just randomly. For Ryan, it really is if you wear something too tight or there's any rubbing or friction, it causes it. And there are different types, and Ryan, unfortunately, has the unfortunate occurrence of being the only person in history that's been diagnosed with all three subtypes. So, and there's only been 40 bolus diagnoses ever. So to have that, not only the bolus PG, but to have all three subtypes of it is just crazy, crazy rare. And now, it's taken us a lot to even get to that diagnosis.
All right. That's exactly where I'm going. So to get to that diagnosis, you had to travel not only from where you live, but ultimately to the Mayo Clinic. And the Mayo Clinic at first, Ryan, suggested you have a problem with substance abuse?
Yeah, thanks, Steve. So it was quite an ordeal. So the initial diagnosis was pyoderma gangrenosum, but there were some things that didn't quite line up with how they were going to treat it. So I had to go to the Mayo Clinic and then subsequently to Johns Hopkins. But at the Mayo Clinic, I was there. I arrived and I was having the time of my life. I was trying to make the best of the situation and encouraging people to have the best day of their lives. I was enjoying essentially being an episode of House. And they're running all of these tests, and for the first 24 hours, everything was great. After almost exactly 24 hours, we had a resident come in and explain to us very quickly that they were discharging me because they believed that the lesions were being caused by substance abuse and what they called factitious disorder, where essentially someone does something to themselves. So their theory was that I suffer from post-traumatic stress disorder, and their theory was that I was disassociating and going off and applying or injecting chemicals to my skin. This, on top of that, they believed that the reason that I wasn't remembering all of this was because I was using substances. And so they actually labeled me a polysubstance abuser and discharged me from the hospital. As an attorney, that can be extremely damaging because oftentimes our medical records aren't don't necessarily get the same protection that a normal person would. For instance, if someone accuses us of being drunk or something because they just have a grudge to settle because they lost a case, we can have to pull our medical records and go and prove that we're not a drug addict to a disciplinary review board. So I was instantly just mortified, not only for the fact that I was being discharged from Mayo, but on top of that, they canceled all of my controlled substance prescriptions. So now I no longer was able to get pain pills for one of the most painful conditions that people can actually go through. And then on top of that, I had to worry about the potential for, you know, ultimately losing my law license if this were to come to light.
Wouldn't blood tests, and then we have to break for commercials here, but wouldn't blood tests prove that you weren't on any illegal substances?
You would think so, and they actually did. In fact, I tested negative even for, at that point, I had a prescription for narcotic pain pills, but they weren't helping so much, so I was not taking them. So when we arrived, I did do drug tests, and they actually all came back negative. But that didn't stop them from saying that I was still a poly-substance abuser. They essentially took words that Mikkel had said, twisted them around in a lovely sort of way that makes most lawyers envious, and said that my drug tests were presumptive positive.
Which doesn't make any sense. So eventually you go to Johns Hopkins, and that is where, as I understand the story, you're ultimately diagnosed. We will finish that story, but then you come back home and, let's see, you lose your job officially. You lose your insurance, perhaps, and we'll talk about what happened with all of that, which, again, the point of us doing this is this can happen to anyone, and we don't have a safety net necessarily. We're talking to Mikkel and Ryan Becker. Wow, what a story this is. And then you go from Mayo Clinic, where you're presumed somehow, at least by some, at the renowned Mayo Clinic. I mean, you wouldn't think this would be the case at the Mayo Clinic, but it was. And then from there, you go to Johns Hopkins. Is that, Ryan, where you ultimately got the diagnosis and at least some direction and also confirmation that, no, you're not a drug addict. No, you are somehow, some way not harming yourself to cause these major black lesions that you have all over?
Well, yes and no, Steve. So we did go to the Johns Hopkins. We went there actually at the recommendation of the head of neurology at the Mayo Clinic, and we went there because they had the Center for Undiagnosed, the National Institute of Health Center for Undiagnosed and Unknown Illnesses, and so I was able to go there and be a part of that program. And when we arrived, initially, for I would say the first week, I was treated very well, and they understood I'm not a drug addict, that it would be ridiculous for me to be going and harming myself and then flying my family around the country costing thousands of dollars to try to get a treatment from or a diagnosis from the world's best hospitals. But then things turned. After about a week, they were still kind of baffled by what was going on. Because I have all three subtypes, it didn't look or fit into the mold of just classic or ulcerative PG. And that's what most doctors are used to dealing with if they've even seen PG at all. And so after about a week, they had just a few more tests that they wanted to run. They still haven't been able to confirm anything. And the thing with pyoderma gangrenosum is it's actually a diagnosis of exclusion, meaning to get that final diagnosis and treatment plan, you have to test for just about everything. So we've heard countless stories from people who have PG where it takes years and thousands and tens of thousands, if not hundreds of thousands of dollars to get a diagnosis just so they can be treated. So I'm at Johns Hopkins and they are doing one last test. They're going to do a colonoscopy and an endoscopy. And they tell me that they're going to discharge me after they're done with these tests. Now, initially, I was told, we're going to keep you here until we have a diagnosis. But my understanding is that based on just the fact that I had open sores and being at the undiagnosed and unknown illness center, I was in on a floor where there was a lot of unknown illnesses. So they were concerned about me getting an infection or something that was, not treatable based on the openings in my skin. So they run the test, and then they end up discharging me. However, they did have a preliminary diagnosis or preliminary fact or finding that it was bullous PG, and it was idiopathic bullous PG. So as Mikkel mentioned earlier, there's only been about 40 cases in the history of this illness that they've diagnosed that. So even that was extremely rare, but it wasn't as rare as we thought, as we would find out later. They also gave me a referral to Dr. Alexander Ortega at OHSU back in Portland in the Pacific Northwest, who is the world's most renowned specialist on PG. He's done the most research. He's run the most tests, and he probably sees the most PG patients. He sees about 40 per month, while most see about 20 in their entire career.
And so, PG, to be clear, PG is what?
Pyoderma gangrenosa.
That doesn't help much anyway, but you explained it a little bit earlier. Now, let me ask Mikkel, at times did you feel like at that point in time, I mean, here you are crisscrossing the country, you're at the best medical institutions in theory, and in many ways I'm sure they are, that your husband, because they just didn't know, Mikkel, that he was just given up on.
Oh, absolutely. I definitely did, and it's, I think that's where we sometimes lose that empathy in healthcare, because if this was happening to anyone's family member going through that, they would, oh my God, it'd just be awful, because literally these sores, and they would unfold before everyone's eyes, where it's like dozens more erupted all over his body. And so it was just getting worse and worse. And when there wasn't a diagnosis, they're like, well, we'll just have to kind of watch and see, you know, see what happens. And that's part of it with PG, is that sometimes they just wait and see. But the problem is that Ryan's like, I only have so much skin left, you know, and this is going to cause not only the permanent scarring, but more importantly is, you know, the great potential of dying from infection and other related things. So it's been constant through all of this of feeling like we're going to lose Ryan, and just that anxiety of, please, God, let this stop, because it just is a relentless disease that is literally kind of taking his life right before our eyes, his mobility, Ryan being this really strong man, to all of a sudden he's in a wheelchair when we're going through the airport or things like that that I would have never seen happening. And for sure, I felt like people weren't taking it as seriously as I would have hoped, and even at times blaming him, which felt really crazy. And really, there was no reason behind that either, other than I think that it was the unknown. And so when someone doesn't know something, it's a lot easier, I think, to put it on something like substance abuse than to really get to the root cause.
All right. So we only have 3 minutes left here. So, Ryan, first of all, your age and your wife Mikkel's age, so people get some idea, so they know that, I mean, these are young people we're talking about. But in addition to that, okay, so you go back to the West Coast, you begin to get treatment, but then you are told some things by your workplace.
Yeah, so I'm 38. Mikkel is 39. Mikkel, forgive me for saying that on air.
No one will know.
We did go back to the West Coast. There I was diagnosed with all three subtypes the first time in history. And I began an experimental treatment that hopefully and so far has been saving my life. But then I received a certified letter from my work letting me know that they were actually going to discharge me because I had run out of paid leave time, and my, and this was just before long-term disability was going to kick in. And so because I was out of paid leave time, even though I was on approved medical leave and on Washington State approved medical leave, they were going to discharge me the day before I became, about a week before I became eligible for long-term disability. Subsequently, we were able to, with some exposure in the local news media, my coworkers actually donated their leave time to keep me from losing my job at least until November, or at least until September 3rd. It seems almost already defined that I am going to lose my job on that date, but at least that incredible generosity from my coworkers allowed me to keep my job and my medical insurance through the end of the year. So that was just a huge, huge blessing that they did.
Yeah, but you're still, helpful. And I'm cutting you off because we only have a minute here, but you're still going to ultimately lose your job. And I also want to know how much money, with insurance or not, has this cost you? Don't give me an exact dollar amount because I don't want that. But has this cost you an enormous amount of money out of pocket? Is it going to bankrupt you potentially? And are you seeking help in that regard because the insurance just isn't doing it?
Yes, absolutely. So it costs us almost $4,000 to $5,000 a month for just my wound care, which is not covered. Things like bandages and stuff is not covered by insurance. Then there's all the medical bills that haven't been covered and the fight with my medical insurance. So right now, we have hundreds of thousands of dollars in medical bills that are up in the air on whether insurance is going to cover them or not. And we've already spent about $25,000 just on bandages. So to help offset that, we did create a GoFundMe. Listeners can find it at GoFundMe.com/Ryan and Kel. That's GoFundMe.com/RYAN. ANDKEL. And people have been incredibly generous, but it's with Mikkel still not being able to work because she spends literally hours a day just wrapping my wounds and cleaning them. It hasn't been enough. So we have a goal of $200,000. So far, we've raised about $85,000. So there's still a long way to go just to cover the known expenses that we have now. Not to mention the unknowns of when Mikkel's actually going to be able to go back to work. I am going to lose my job on September 3rd, and then we are going to lose our medical coverage.
Unbelievable.
There's a lot of expenses that are uncovered.
Yeah, and it just says something about our medical system. Guys, I wish you the best of luck. You know that. And if there's anything more we can do, let us know. I know that GoFundMe page has more information than what we could cover on the radio. Mikkel and Ryan Becker, thank you so much.
Absolutely. Thank you so much, Steve.
Yeah, Godspeed to you guys. Thank you.